All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio out of the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. Folks, we are in some trying times. We are in some dark times. We must fight for an America without hate. We must fight for an America without bigotry. We must fight for an America without racism. We must fight for our rights. We must fight to continue to be Americans. Some of those rights are being threatened, taken away, but we have to get out here and fight the good fight. You know, and it has to be done, folks. It has to be in a non-violent way. We know how to do things non-violently. So let's go out and make our voices heard, fighting non-violently.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Thank you. All right, if that was only reality. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from the city of Chicago. I'm near the lake. I'm on the north side of the city. No, I am not in the middle of all that violence. No, I'm a little bit away from it. But people are leaving the city because of it. But you'll never hear Mayor Emanuel or the Governor Bruce Rauner say that. But anyway, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's gray. It's cloudy. It's raining. And it's just miserable once again for spring. And they're even talking about snow. Snow. Goddamn snow. But, you know, anything is possible in the city of Chicago. Anything is possible. The weather changes every time you round the corner. You know, it changes. But anyway, it's a great day to be alive. It's a great day to be thinking positive and doing positive things. It's a great day to be listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. And this is April, folks. This is April. April, what is it? April 3rd. We're starting a new month of the George Wilder Jr. Show. Hopefully, it'll be a new month, entire month. We've got some great guests throughout the month of April, throughout the month of May, even throughout the month of May. It's great to be alive. It's great to be here. It's great to be on the radio. It's great to be back. Last week, it was one of those. Last week, it was like a nightmare. Everything was going wrong last week. But anyway, we're over with last week. Now we got this week, and we'll see how it goes this week. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. My guest is Marty Angelo. He will tell us some things about his life, hopefully. I mean, the guy's been texting me. He's really, really excited about being on the show. I'm really excited of having him. And that should be fun. Stick around for that. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Block Talk Radio right here. Block Talk Radio. Yes, I'm still a little bit under the weather, but I'm fine. And I'm here, so that's it. And I want to thank everybody who have wished me good wishes and good health and all that kind of thing. With this type of weather we're having in Chicago, everybody in the city of Chicago needs it, you know, because the weather changes so fast, and it's up and down. It's cold, it's hot, it's cool. I mean, you know. And it affects not only me, but, you know, a lot of people in the city of Chicago, because a lot of people go out here and they're not dressed properly. Even myself, sometimes I don't really. And you pay the price for it at some venture. Anyway, we are on. This is April. We have what does this say? Your web browser. OK, whatever. It switched or something. It changed. I'm looking at the computer here, and is when it's rainy, cloudy, sometimes especially if it's lightning and thundering, it affects the computers, and the computers will automatically, if it's affecting the computers, it's, you know, it's rightfully so, is going to affect the broadcast. All right, we've been you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, 347-857-1762. I didn't even prepare any monologue. I don't have an outline. I don't have a script. I don't have anything, folks. The only thing I have is that I'm on the air, and we're going to try and get through it some sort of way. We're going to be talking about a variety of things, talk about things that are in the news, anything you want to talk about. This is a variety show. You talk about a variety of things. It doesn't just because it's in the category of politics doesn't mean you have to talk about politics. I had a person the other day said, George, I like listening to your show because you have those authors on your show. And the way you give those authors all the time in the world sometimes where other shows probably wouldn't do that. So he said that he enjoyed the show. And I was looking at some statistics of the George Wilder Jr. Show, and the ratings and the statistics shows that the majority of the listeners that listen to the show, just sit down and just, you know, just listen to the George Wilder Jr. Show, are female. I mean, I was floored when I learned that the majority of the listeners to this show are female, and a very, very small percentage, not that small of a percentage. excuse me, are men, male. And that's interesting. That's very interesting. You know, but whether you're female or male, you're listening to the show, great. You're having a good time. You're learning stuff. I'm learning stuff. And it's all about making the world a better place. I'm just hearing something about North Korea is testing or trying to test the patience or the resolve of Donald Trump, the American president. And this could lead to war. But you know what? We've been saying this for a long time since Donald Trump been in office that we're all going to get blown up. We're all going to get nuclearized. You know, I mean, we got Donald Trump. He doesn't know what the hell he's doing. So leaders around the world, they're going to test him. They're going to test his resolve. And by him being such an ass, a lot of leaders around the world don't like him. You know, so be prepared to be blown up. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Nobody takes that literally. I'm just funning, folks. Nobody wants to be blown up, okay? All right, Valerie Jarrett reveals post-White House plans. Who cares what Valerie Jarrett wants to do? She's out of the White House. Leave her alone. I can tell you one thing Valerie Jordan wants to do. She wants to be beautiful. She wants to look younger than what her age is saying. That's something about some of the women. I mean, they get these highfalutin jobs. The first thing they're going to do is buy a lot of lipstick, buy a lot of makeup, buy all kinds of dresses, rings, and jewelry, and they are going to become beautiful. At one time, they were hideous, but they get these highfalutin, high-paying jobs. All of a sudden, they're Miss Universe. They're beautiful. They're gorgeous, you know, and buying all these clothes and makeup. A lot of women, they do that, you know. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. But I'm just saying, people. A lot of women change when they get these high jobs, and they start to look good, which is great. It's beautiful to look nice. I mean, you're more accepted when you're beautiful than when you're not. And I was telling my son that, you know, I was saying, hey, wow, you got to look great when you go out into this world. Because that's one of the ways of you being accepted is looking great, looking wonderful, you know, and that's what it's all about. It's about looks, you know, no, and there's no other way about it. It's not about how much money you have. I mean, you don't have to have a cent, but if you look great, you're in a position to make a lot of money. And you always want to look your best. You always want, every time you walk out that door, you want to look your best. You don't have to look like a whore or a tramp or a pimp or a thug. You think that's looking your best. That's not looking your best. What do you want to do? You want to look professional. Professional. You don't want to look like a thug. You don't want to look like a prostitute. But somebody, a professional holding a professional position, a job. you know, I know I'm going to get a lot of calls on that, probably on the inbox in my email or something. George, you don't know what you talk. You know, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe it's this cold I have. Who knows? Well, anyway, Valerie Jarrett reveals post-White House plans. Who cares? Man, Chicago man on the run for 10 years arrested in Mexico. Kids safety group releases recall on report card. That's interesting. Second teen arrest and sexual assault streamed on Facebook. You know, I'm and the thing about it, this is the second time that a hideous crime has been streamed on Facebook from Chicago, And it's when it's streamed, I mean, it's all around the damn world. This is so embarrassing for the city of Chicago. I think last week it was 7 people killed, shot and killed. A couple of days ago, it was 4 people shot and killed. I don't know how the police superintendent sleep at night. I don't know how he actually go on about his duties about this. I mean, then he gets on television, does a news conference and say that crime is down, virtually down, statistically down. You tell that to the people who those 7 people who were gunned down. Tell it to him. Tell it to them. Think they'll tell you that crime is down. Tell it to all those people who are leaving those communities, who are leaving the city of Chicago. Can you tell them that crime is down? You get a 6-figure salary, Mr. Superintendent, to serve and protect the people of the city of Chicago, and it is not happening. I don't give a damn what the mayor say, what the aldermen say. All I know is I'm a taxpayer, and I'm telling you what I'm saying. You are jack. I know all the excuses. We don't need to hear excuses. We don't need to hear about resources. We don't need to hear that you need help. But, yeah, he said he was pleading to Washington, Donald Trump, that they need help in the city of Chicago. They don't need no help. What they need to do is do their damn job. You got to do your job. The police, every police officer gets a pretty good damn salary. They get a damn good salary. But yet people are constantly dying in the city. Their job is to serve and protect. And that's not happening. And I've said several times, one of the best ways of ending crime, one of the best ways is to saturate these communities with police officers. They patrol the streets every 10 minutes or every 5 minutes. If these guys, these gangbangers, these thugs, even inside their own homes, if they see the presence of the police always hanging around, always there, they will not shoot somebody in front of them. But every time somebody is shot on the streets, you ask yourself, where was the police? Where was the police to prevent this? Where were the police to apprehend the bad guys who perpetrated such a horrific event? And that's my thinking all the time. Every time someone gets shot, whether it's outside of the home or inside of the home, my thinking is, where was the police? After these people were shot, after all of this carnage is laying out in the streets and on the sidewalk, you see so many cops. They're all over the place after the crime has been committed. The bodies are laying out. The police are rushing onto the scene. You see so many police officers. But before, there was no one. That's why it happened. But before, there was no one. There was not a cop around. There was nothing. But the minute somebody gets shot, gunned down, they're all over the place. They're standing around like maggots. They're standing around wondering what to do. instead of chasing the bad guys. I don't think that should be happening. I don't think after someone is shot, police should go to the scene and just stand around. I think they should be out there looking for these perpetrators, these murderers, these thugs who do that, who have done that. But you cannot count the police officers showing up on a scene after the fact, after the shooting is done, after the crime has been committed, after it's over. I mean, they like, you know, they're like litter bugs all over the place. But 10 minutes ago, before this happened, you didn't see not one police officer patrolling that neighborhood, not one police officer on foot, not one officer nowhere. That's the reason why crime happens so much in some of these crime-ridden areas. Police are not there when they should be. One of the things I think I know is that, you know, in the city of Chicago, at least, the police officers and a lot of the residents of the city of Chicago, they know the high crime neighborhoods. They know where they are. We know where they are. We know Inglewood, Harrison. We know these high crime districts in the city of Chicago. The police know them way better than you or I do, or anybody. So if you know that a neighborhood is at risk for crime, why aren't you over there patrolling? Why don't you have someone in that neighborhood 24/7 all the time? Never leave that area. You know, I mean, they're talking about paying police officers overtime. Overtime for what? I don't see overtime stopping the shootings in the city of Chicago. You got these high crime, high risk areas. Why don't you put the police officers over there? Okay, on the north side of the city, there's not as many police officers over here on the north side of the city of Chicago. Why? Because it's not a high risk area. It's not a high crime area. I can understand it. But sometimes we see more police officers over here than there are in those high risk areas. And we wonder why. Take the police officers off the north sides of the city where there's no high crime risk and put them in those areas where there are a risk of high criminal activity and shootings and murders. I don't need to see police patrolling around here on the north side. You need to be patrolling over there where it's definitely is going to be some kind of criminal activity. Drugging, prostitution, gangland shootings. You need to be over there where the gangbangers are, the thugs are. And another thing I've been saying for a long time, you want to lower crime in the city of Chicago, get the goddamn gangs up out of those communities. Get the thugs out of those communities. The gangbangers, the guys who are waving the guns around, taunting the police. Get those gangbangers up, and you know who they are. The police know who these gangbangers are. They know where these gangbangers are, and they know what these gangbangers have done. But yet, the gangbangers still stay and terrorizes the community and the people of those communities. And I've said this before, the reason why a lot of people are still in some of these high crime neighborhoods, it's because they can't afford to move. The people who can afford to move, they have gotten out, and you can't blame them. Yeah, I've talked about this too. Chicago population has dropped dramatically. Instead of being the third largest state in America, we're going to wind up being the fourth or fifth because people are leaving in droves because of a number of reasons. High crime, high taxes, and it's so goddamn expensive to stay here. This is an expensive-ass city. So if you want people to come here and spend money, you better do something about the crime. And one of the things, to me, it seems that Mayor Rahm Emanuel is not that into stopping crime. It just appears that way to me. Oh, he's into beautification of the of Chicago. He's into building more libraries. He's into bringing more tourism into the city. But hey, wow, look, you have a problem, Mr. Mayor. The problem is shootings and killings and murders. And I've said this several times. Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago, he should make solving and eradicating crime in the city of Chicago his first priority. I mean, if I was mayor, it would have to be my first priority. I'd say, hey, put those other projects on the back burner. We got this crime situation in the city of Chicago we have to solve. But this guy, he just tries to toss it off, move it to the side, sometimes act like it doesn't exist. And if you question him on it, he's going to get pissed off. This is why I say we need new leadership in the city of Chicago, somebody who cares about bringing down the crime in this city. Because this guy doesn't. I don't think he does. Bruce Rauner, the governor of Illinois, I know he don't think about, he doesn't give a damn about let the black people shoot each other. Who cares? If they shoot each other, we're going to come in there and tear that neighborhood up and we're going to build condos and corporations. Let them shoot each other. But you have to, if you care about your city, if you care about people coming here, if you care about, you want people to live here, stay here, you know, so you have to do something. You just can't let this stuff keep happening because Chicago is one of the highest cities for high taxes in the world. Well, in America, put it that way. It seems like the world, though, because we pay some of the highest taxes. But if you got people constantly leaving your city, leaving the state because of high crime, who's going to pay your taxes? There won't be nobody to pay your taxes, your sales taxes, your property taxes, Cook County taxes, taxes every damn where. Taxes to walk down the street, taxing the sideway. The sidewalk, taxing the air you breathe. I mean, the taxes are just phenomenal. So, the city of Chicago, we have problems. But and I think it starts with the leadership. You have the mayor, you have the governor, you have the superintendent. All of these people are voted into office. And one of their duties when they're voted into office by the people of the state, of the city, is to protect the citizens of this city and state. They are garnered with protecting all of us. And that is not happening because they do not care. They're going to pretend like they care. They're going to get on television and just spin it and lie about that they care. But if they cared, you would see it in their actions, not in what they say. These people don't care. They don't give a damn about what's going on. That's why I say, folks, you got to get out there and vote. You vote these people in and suddenly they promise you the world and you vote them in. And all of a sudden, they wind up being your worst enemy. So anyway, we have to, I think we got to kind of try to talk to these people and try to get them to do their jobs. They're getting paid to do a job. Do it. I don't think it's that hard to lower the crime in the city of Chicago. I don't. I just think we got some people who just don't give a damn, who just don't care, who just are afraid. Maybe they're afraid to do their jobs. I've heard it where some police officers are afraid to stop people on the street because, you know, they feel they may wind up on YouTube or something. That, I mean, if you're a police officer in the city of Chicago, you're getting paid pretty good money to be a police officer. And if you're not doing your job, then you should quit. You should quit. You're getting paid to serve and protect. If you can't do that, if you're afraid to do that, if you're afraid to walk up to some bad guy on the street and ask for an ID, then you should quit. You know, as simple as that. If you can't do the job, give it up to somebody who will do it. Don't just linger on the payroll and you are not doing your job because, you know, for whatever reason, But the fact is, folks, people are dying in the city of Chicago. It's almost an embarrassment. Every time you look around, somebody's streaming live. Something is streaming live on Facebook from Chicago of somebody being tortured in a video. Suddenly, you got the superintendent coming out and saying, well, crime is down. Statistically, crime is down. BS. Whenever the superintendent comes out and says that crime is down after 10 people have been shot, believe me, crime is not down. He's just out there trying to save his ass and protect the rank and file. They're not doing their jobs, period. Period. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. My guest is author Marty Angelo on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're talking about making the world a better place, folks. In everyone's life, there are pages that are simply a must read. Isn't that something? All right, be kind to one another out there. It is so easy to do. City of Chicago, it is 6:25 p.m. straight up Chicago time. I believe it's about 50 degrees out there, folks, but it's cloudy. It's very, very cloudy, rainy, cool, and I have a cold, but I'm going to try and get through it. I mean, last week I was sicker than a dog, folks. I mean, I couldn't even come on. I had to apologize to some of the guests that were supposed to be on the show. George is not there. No, George is in the bed. He's got a runny nose. All righty. We will be right back, folks. We're going to have you listen to this. One of the things about the George Wilder Jr. Show, there are no commercials. I've been approached to do commercials on my show. I really have. They say things like, well, George, if you have commercials on your show, you'll get paid. Then I thought maybe I should. Anyway, we got to think about that. All right, here we go. This is a musical break. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show once again, folks. I said if you really want to get in touch with me, I'm all over the place. I'm on Google, Facebook, Twitter. I'm all over the place. Where else am I? Instagram, all over the place. Amazon.com. I'm a writer, so I'm there too. So I got some stuff there too. Check that stuff out. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio, 347-857-1762. 50 degrees in the city of Chicago, 629-630. Depends on which clock you look at. Central Standard Time, Chicago, Illinois. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Okay, you're on the air.
Hello,
Marty. Marty Angelo. All right, thanks for tuning in. I've got your text. I said, oh wow, this you were texting about you're going to be on the show. Thank you so much for that. And Marty Angelo, tell my audience a little bit about yourself.
Well, you know, it's funny. Excuse me. I was listening to it a little bit before we connected, and I was thinking, flashing back to 1968 in Chicago, when I attended the Democratic National Convention, and you had a mayor there. It was called Mayor Richard J. Daley.
And yeah, yeah.
And that guy did not, and he was a Democrat, and he did not, take any, from any of us. And
I know
the riot in the streets of the Democratic Convention, and you know, and he was. They had the cops out beating on us and everything. So, I empathize with you, you know, in Chicago, what's going on there.
I think he said something like shoot to kill, if I can remember.
That was kind of the way it was. I mean, and you know, yeah. I have to, you know, when you say tell me a little bit about yourself, I mean, I had to put myself in that spot to say, how in the world did you get to that point in your life, man, where you would be out in the street protesting against what was going on in Vietnam. I mean, that was basically the bottom line. And I think back to where was that seed planted in my life? And I can relate to a lot of the college kids that are going out in the street now that are protesting against our president and, giving him a hard time, giving everybody a hard time. You know, mainly because I didn't expect him to win, but you know, that rebellious seed that was planted in my life happened in college. When I went to college, yeah. This was back in the 60s, I was a naive high schooler, and I didn't smoke pot, I didn't party a little bit, we drank a little bit in high school, I didn't know anybody that smoked pot. When I got to college, I was exposed to these radical, very radical left-wing liberal professors. And, you know, they want to talk about it today. That root, that all started back in the 60s when I never realized even what a radical liberal was. I didn't know the difference between a radical, liberal, conservative, whatever. I was just a naive high schooler. So I started listening to these professors in college. And they passed out marijuana. They gave us signs to go protest out on the campus against the war, Vietnam, against Richard Nixon. And this seed that was planted in me of rebellion and left-wing radical liberalism was profound. I mean, I turned into this crazy maniac guy. I used to book bands in college. I brought in the Grateful Dead in the Jefferson Airplane so that they would open up the show for speakers from the Chicago 7. This was back in 68, 69. And the Chicago 7 were Bobby Hoffman, Jerry Hoffman, Jerry Rubin, Bobby Hoffman, Bobby Seale, Abby Hoffman, yeah, rather. And these were radical, radical. These were the leaders of the Students for a Democratic Society, and which I was a member of, and I was a card-carrying member. How in the world did I get to that point, man? I mean, you know, why would I bother with that? And, you know, our professors were telling us there was this big generation gulf between the us and them. And I didn't know who them were. I guess them were my parents. And it was anybody that didn't protest the war, Vietnam, didn't smoke pot and grow hair. I was a hippie. I looked like Charlie Manson's brother. And I could not understand, you know, how in the world would I want to get involved with a group like that? The more drugs I took, the more hooked I was, the more music I listened to, the more hooked I was, the more demonstrations I went to and helped organize, the more hooked I was. Woodstock came along. Everybody went to Woodstock. Everybody had a great time. And yet no one was seen to be suffering any consequences. We started to see that at Kent State University when four students were shot dead by the National Guard. I mean, the government finally got tired of all of this. Richard Nixon didn't take any crap from anybody. And he called out the guard, and all of a sudden, four of us are dead, four students. And I was one of those, you know, students, not at Kent State at the time. I was at the University of Buffalo. And so, I mean, why was my life out of control, brother? Let me tell you, it was so far out of control that I wound up, I stayed in the music business after college. I started working with bands. I was a manager of a band. I took them to New York City from Buffalo. They were quite successful in that city, but we needed to get a break in New York. And the first person that I ran into that I had gone back and forth a bunch of times, and nobody really wanted to know about a group. It was hard to break into the music business at that time. But I met Jimi Hendrix at a club called Steve Paul Scene. Steve was a nice guy, but he didn't want to hear anything about my band, and he told me to get a hit record, come back again some other day. And it was tough back then.
Yeah.
But I approached Jimi Hendrix, who was in this club, and he said to me, you know, yeah, I'd love to listen to your band. I had a tape recorder with me. And so he went back in the owner's office, this Steve Paul's office, and we listened to this group. And he loved it. And high. You know, it was the first time I ever really got high with anybody like that. And, you know, there I was. I thought, man, this is it. I'm right on the verge of success. And so everything worked out. I mean, if you got any questions, just jump in there. But
I was gonna ask about Jimmy.
Go ahead.
I was gonna ask about Jimi Hendrix. I mean, I was a total Jimmy. Yeah. At first, I wasn't a Jimi Hendrix fan. He kind of grew on me, you know.
He
grew on me because he was just a phenomenal musician, you know. And he is one of the people who influenced me to pick up the guitar and want to play it way he did.
Oh, wow.
And
he was a very friendly guy.
Yeah, they said he was. I never met him, but I've heard some things about him. They say he was very friendly. They say he was awesomely intelligent. He was awesomely intelligent.
Well, but one of these times when we were in a room together, and you know, he was tripping on LSD. You know, he was very influenced by LSD, and you know, we were from that generation that believed Dr. Timothy Leary, where he said, "Tune in, turn on, and drop out." You know, that was our mantra. And so that's what everybody was doing. They were turning and turning on and dropping out and going to San Francisco and becoming hippies. And so Jimmy, you know, was a big advocate of LSD. You know, he was ashamed that he got strung out with so many different drugs. Because you were right. The guy was very, very intelligent. Great guy, great musician, great writer, great guitar player. But yet he said to us one time on this trip, "Hey, man, you know something?" He goes, "I just realized where we're all from." And I was like, you know, wow, this is an eye opener, you know, because I believed anything anybody told me back then. And so, you know, who was I? I was just this guy from, you know, from a small town in New York, and here's this big, huge, you know, musician. He had just really started making it big time. And so he goes, "Yeah, man," he says, "we're from the asteroid belt of Saturn." And I we all kind of looked at
him. Wow. Like, yeah.
Where? Yeah. That's where, you know, that's how lost I was, brother. I mean, I could not find my way in life. And I can relate so much to a lot of people that are out there that are, you know, trying to find a way. And even in that, and even in the entertainment business, though I was successful at what I was doing as a manager, I still was lost. I was heartbroken. I was depressed. I couldn't find any kind of peace. And so even though I was working and doing what I could do.
From then to now, what do you think of the music business? Yeah. Do you think we've lost some of that? Do you think we lost some of that? There are so many
generation.
People who are.
You know,
go ahead. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's a different generation. I mean, it's I'm thankful to be alive and watch this generation. I mean, I can see where these roots came from. I can see, you know, when I kept going in the music business, I became a record promoter radio DJ, a disco DJ. I was a television producer of dance television shows in the disco era. I helped promote Saturday Night Fever, Thank God It's Friday, and the movie Fame, and their soundtracks. And so, you know, we were in a time when music, you could listen to it, it made sense. There was lyrics, there was things that, there was not that much rebellion other than from folk groups or groups like the Dead, and they were protesting the war. But, you know, once the 70s hit, you know, the late 70s, where dance music came in and people were out
disco,
in the clubs.
Yeah.
It started changing. You know, it's like somebody opened a window and blew in some fresh air after those radical 60s, and we thought we were going to blow ourselves up. The Russians were going to come. Talk about Russians. Here we are talking about Russians again. And at that time, they were going to come and blow us up. So our professors told us there was no need to think about your future because we're going to all blow up and it's the end of the world. And so, but music has changed. I mean, it got electronic. Disco gave a beat.
It has changed dramatically. If you're thinking about the current climate, it has changed dramatically. And I'm going to tell you something about me. I like the music from the 60s, 70s, and even 80s a lot better than what they're doing now. You know, what they're doing now is just not, it has changed dramatically. I mean, it has changed maybe even
for. I can't listen to it.
I can't listen to it. I don't listen to it, you know, because like you just got through saying, the music of the 60s and the 70s, it had a better beat. People sung with more feeling, you know, people were they were dedicated in getting the song and the music right. You know, today it's all about today. It's all about your voice, you know, how, you know, I mean, that's okay, but you know, you gotta. Where's jazz? I think jazz is dead, or is not as out there as it used to be.
Doesn't have a presence. Jazz and blues. Hey, listen, Chicago, man. I remember coming to Chicago many, many times with rock bands, blues bands, jazz bands. I remember Paul Butterfield and the blues band in Chicago. I remember some of them clubs. I remember hearing Big Mama Thornton at one of the clubs in Chicago. And, you know, that was the time, man, when everybody was just, you know, into this music. And blues bands became very successful. In fact, that I had been managing was a blues jazz band. People like to listen to stuff and get into the different guitar players or piano players. And they listened. And nowadays, it's just, I don't know, they got this repetitious beat. I was watching these guys, you know, I lived down in Florida, and I hate to tell you what the temperature is right now, but the other day I was at the beach and there was a bunch of guys, young guys, you know, like probably in their 20s, and they were laying around this radio or you know, a player, and they were listening to this high tempo techno beat laying on the beach. And I mean, I couldn't even stand to be near it for like 2 seconds. I got to get away from these guys. You know, this is insane. These guys, and they're talking, and one guy's sleeping. And they're listening to something that, like, the same track played consistently, like a drum roll, for probably three minutes. I mean, how did you sit in a beach and listen to something like that?
I mean, you never know. They might have been high on something. You know, you never know.
Yeah, but I mean, high. You get high, you get mellow, or smoke some pot. You know, that's what we used to do. Yeah. You know, you listen to some good music. You'd have to,
like you say,
cocaine or heroin.
like you say, it's a different generation, you know.
They think, they think it's different. They think it is different, but they're going down the same road that all of us have gone down. You know, I've done a lot of work in ministry, you know, Christian prison ministry, and for 35 years I've been reaching out to prisons and drug addicts and drunkards and a lot of celebrities. I lived in California, so I mean, I knew a lot of people throughout this course of my life in the music business for 15 years, and so I felt kind of an obligation when a lot of these young kids were getting in trouble, and you know, and they thought that they were, and that was new, going out and getting drunk and driving drunk and snorting cocaine and getting in trouble and driving around with coke in their pocket and that, and they thought that this was like, you know, cool. And that you shouldn't suffer any consequences because you're in the entertainment business. And so I tell my story about to them. I reach out to them, and I send them copies of my book, Once Life Matters, and I try to influence them. I've gotten into, you know, many of them into rehabs, or I try to put them in faith-based rehabs for about a year, as those are the ones that really work. You know, the secular programs, their success ratio is 0 to 4%. That's not a good statistic, and they're very expensive. You know, they cost like $30,000 a month. And so I try to tell people that you have to do whatever it takes for however long it takes to overcome and recover from this dredge that's been through our generations and since the 60s, actually. And so,
yeah, Marty,
a lot of them listen. Yeah.
I was going to say Marty Angelo on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Marty, can we talk about your book?
Yeah, sure. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. My book, I wrote my book. I started writing my book when I was in prison, and I was going to get to the point to where I was, in the entertainment business, and I was going back and forth from California to Miami, and I was a manager of a band called the Grass. I don't know if you remember this group called the Grassroots. They were.
Oh yeah, of course, man.
Yeah. I was their manager for quite a while. And we would travel with a group called Three Dog Night and the Beach Boys.
Yeah.
And we would do shows with the Mamas and the Papas and Jim Croce and those types of people. So my job was to make sure they got some.
I don't want to interject, but I still listen to their music. I still do. I mean, I can download it from YouTube and I listen to their music. I think it's wonderful. I think that's great music. Yeah. And like I said before, I just can't get to the music that they're playing today. I just can't get next to it. And if I want to hear something, I go back to the good old days where music, in my opinion, was music. You know, was music.
Well, I used to be in awe when these groups would play. We used to do have a concert with three of these groups together. So you imagine a Beach Boy concert with Three Dog Night and the Grassroots. Every single song that you heard was a hit record. I mean, a legitimate hit record. Yeah. I mean, there's hundreds of hits. So I mean, but that lifestyle that I was in, I wound up coming down to Florida to buy some cocaine and bring back out to California. And unfortunately, the friends that I had that I bought it from were under investigation by the Drug Enforcement Agency. And so I walked right into this investigation. I got arrested with them. And I wound up in Dade County Jail in Miami. And that stopped me dead in my tracks. I had 4 ounces of cocaine in my pocket. And so that's what, you know, that's kind of stopped me. And I said, you know, I'm in the entertainment business. I told the guy that had the keys to my cell. And he says, shut up.
Yeah, well.
Go lay down on your bunk. He says, tell it to the judge in the morning. And that
so
was
you
my
just...
rude awakening, brother. Let me tell you, because George, it was, and it's kind of like what's happened to these celebrities nowadays that are getting busted, and they think that they can get away with something, that this is something new. And I keep telling them, listen, that's nothing new. Hear my story. I was hanging around with all these big shots, negotiating with big bands and recording contracts and television production. Here I was in jail. And so I started writing my book, Once Life Matters, A New Beginning, while I was in prison, because I pled guilty then. I had 7 months from the point that I was arrested. I had a sister that was a Christian, and she used to pray for me. And she'd send me all this material and telling me about Jesus and that I should be born again and this and that. And I didn't want to know anything about it. But I wanted to be able to, you know, learn a new way of life. And so after I got arrested, you know, in jail, they say you do a lot of introspection. You know, that's what psychiatrists call it. And I started looking at my life, and I'm going, you know, I'm like, gosh, I've been in and out of the hospital 3-4 times. I tried to kill myself a couple of times. I've overdosed. I've come near death so many times, and yet I'm successful. I've got all sorts of money. I have friends that are very successful. I mean, we lived in big houses in Malibu and in Beverly Hills, and yet I was still a mess. And so when I went to prison, I had 7 months prior to going, and I became a Christian. My sister talked me into coming to her house, and I wound up at her door, and she sent me over to, I went with her to some of her friends, and they explained the gospel to me for the first time. I never really heard about it. I was raised somewhat in a religious, like a Catholic home, but we never talked about Jesus and never talked about born again and all of
yeah.
that. And so what they explained it to me, and I prayed, I repented, and they called it, you know, sin. And I said, well, what's sin, man? I don't know what sin is. We stopped talking about sin years ago. We were doing our own thing. That's what that came from our generation in the 60s was do your own thing, turn on, tune in, and drop out. And don't even think about calling your whatever you do wrong sin. And so
once they convinced me of it, I
pled guilty. I went to prison. They gave me 6 years. I could have gotten 60. So I pled guilty. I got out in 2.5 years. But I wrote this book, and that's that you asked me that question. It floored me when I was during that 7 months. I was out on the street and I was searching for what happened to me, because honest to God, brother, I didn't plan on becoming a Christian. I didn't plan on changing my life the way it changed. And I was in awe of the fact that the living God of creation came to live inside of me and changed me from the inside out, because I couldn't do it myself.
Yeah.
And so I wound up going to this bookstore, and in the bookstore was a book called Holes in Time. It was written by a former gangster. His name was Frank Costantino. Beautiful, short book, you know, paperback. You can stick it in your back pocket. And he explained the same thing. I asked the guy at the Christian bookstore, I tried to tell him what happened to me. I said, one day I was this way, one day now I'm different, and I don't know what happened to me. And he says, oh, it sounds like you got born again. He says, you should read this book. And he hands me this book called Holes in Time. And I read it sitting in my car in the parking lot, because I had never heard the gospel explained from a person that I could understand it from, that was same kind of lifestyle. This guy was a gangster, and he, you know, drug user, drinker, and I could understand. I go, wow, you know, wow. I thought only priests and nuns and those types of people were the good guys, and here's a guy who was bad to the bone, and he's explaining how he became good and he was doing all these great things and going to prisons and helping people. I said, that's what I want to do. Wow.
That would be great if I could do something like that.
That's when I started to write the book. That was an inspiration to me. That's why writing is so important, brother. I'm so glad that that's what you do.
I'm a writer.
It helps a lot of people.
Yeah. How can we find your book? If I wanted to go and find your book, how would I find it?
Well, it's on Amazon. I've got 9 other books too, besides Once Life Matters and New Beginning. But I started writing this book, and I wrote it with prisoners and drug addicts in mind. It's on Amazon.
So it must be a good book. It's got to be a good book.
Well, we've given away. You know, I wrote it. Honestly, I wrote it to give it away to prisoners.
Okay.
I mean, I had no intention of selling this book. I had no intention of giving them away to celebrities and things like that.
Okay.
It was strictly for, because I wanted, I was so influenced by this other book that I read that I thought if one person could get something out of my book while they're sitting in prison, maybe their lives will change and maybe they could use my life as an example to say, hey, that's
exactly
can do it. Maybe I can do it. And that's
exactly
what happened.
And that's why I want to know where we can find your book, where we can get it, because if it changed so many people's lives, it can change others also.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
And
I wrote a follow-up book. I took all these letters.
Okay.
I've gotten thousands of letters from prisoners. I've given away 60,000 books into all the nation's prisons and jails in the United States. I continually send them out to anybody that wants one that's sitting in jail or somebody, a parent, like, if you have someone that's listening to us now and they have a loved one that's in prison or in a rehab somewhere, you know, really strung out, doesn't know what to do, they can contact me through my website, martyangelo.com, and send me an email with the inmate's name and number and where they're located, where they're doing time. And I'd gladly send them a book and a letter and encourage them, even in the rehab or someone, even out in the street, that the parent, somebody's having a hard time with their kids. And so, I got so many letters from these people that read the book in prison that I compiled another book called Lives That Matter, Letters from Prison. And I published some of the letters that I received from people that had read this book while they were doing their time.
You know what?
How it infected them.
You know, I want to congratulate you for coming so far and sharing your story here. It's so compelling. It's so real. It's so genuine. And I want to congratulate you on that. And also on you going through so much and then wanting to help others. That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, it's that's been totally amazing. Blessing, believe me, let me tell you something, brother. It's been a real humbling experience.
That is amazing. So give us a website where we can contact you. Give us tell us where your books are again. Give us a title one more time. And can you do that?
Yeah, sure. The book, I've written a second edition of Once Life Matters, A New Beginning. It's the second edition now. It's available on Amazon.com or other online bookstores, but I prefer Amazon because it's a lot easier and quicker shipping. And if anybody needs to contact me, they can contact me through my website, MartyAngelo.com.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty simple. And send me an email and we can communicate that way. Or I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus.
Okay, great.
I appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much.
You're all over the place like I am. Anyway, show is just about over. It's about over.
Yes.
I want to send you a link to the show. I want to send you the link that you're on, the show that you're on right now. I want to send you a link to the show so you can put it on your website.
Absolutely.
People can hear you talking, hear your story. To hear your story on the George Wilder Jr. Show. You can put this particular link on the show. I can send you this link.
Dude, I already alerted a lot of people that we were going to be talking tonight, so I don't know if you're tuned in or not, but the link would
you
be
also
great,
alerted,
and I know people.
You also alerted me, so yeah, you probably did, yeah. Because I kept getting these texts. Probably. Okay, all right. Thanks for being on the show, man, and I hope to have you back.
You're welcome. All right. Thank you so much. God bless you, brother.
Bye-bye. All right. Author Marty Angelo on the George Wilder Jr. Show. That was an impelling story on the George Wilder Jr. Show. This is what we have. This is what it's all about. We will be right back.
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. It is all about making the world a better place. Join me.
Johnson is speaking right now here in Washington. I want to listen in.
And when the time came for STD and cancer screenings, no judgment, no questions asked, Planned Parenthood provided a safe place where I could be treated with gentle guidance. Now, I may have been 15 and surprisingly self-sufficient, but I'm sure there isn't one person here who has not been helped by Planned Parenthood directly or otherwise. When I knew I was coming to speak on behalf of women's reproductive and health issues, every single one of my girlfriends had a story about Planned Parenthood. They saved me so many times. One of my best girlfriends confided in me, saying, "They saved my ass and some other parts too." When I found out I had precancerous signs I never would have known about without my annual checkups, and her speech grew more emphatic and emotional as she described how the organization had helped her decide between treatment options. She was able to make some difficult decisions, deciding what was right for her body and her then partner, without anyone else's interference. My sister also used Planned Parenthood services for years after moving states. She'd been living her whole life in New York City, pursuing her dream to move to California. She had no contacts and no health insurance, but was able to regularly see a doctor at a Planned Parenthood clinic for screenings, advice, birth control, and checkups. For the more than 2.5 million patients a year that rely on Planned Parenthood services for cancer and STD screenings, birth control, safe abortion, and pregnancy planning, these are uncertain and anxious times. Lawmakers in 24 states have tried to block patients from receiving care at Planned Parenthood. Congress has voted to limit access to reproductive services 9 times. Boo. Yes, boo. There are very real and devastating consequences to limiting access to what should be considered basic health care. For millions of Americans, Planned Parenthood is often the only trustworthy and affordable clinic providing safe education, sex education, safe abortion, and life-saving services. President Trump, I did not vote for you. That said, I respect that you are our president-elect, and I want to be able to support you. But first, I ask that you support me. Support my sister. Support my mother. Support my best friend and all of our girlfriends. Support the men and women here today that are anxiously awaiting to see how your next moves may drastically affect their lives. Support my daughter, who may actually, as a result of the appointments you have made, grow up in a country that is moving backwards, not forwards, and who may potentially not have the right to make choices for her body and her future that your daughter Ivanka has been privileged to have. I ask you to support all women and our fight for equality in all things, including the fight to be recognized as individuals who know better for ourselves what is right for our bodies, better than any elected official, popular or otherwise. It is a great honor for me to be speaking here in front of all of you today. After the result of this November's election, I felt as a woman, as an American citizen, a great weight bearing down on my shoulders, the feeling that the near future would present many obstacles, confrontation, and division. My immediate thought after hearing the election results was, oh man, we have so much work to do. But once the heaviness began to subside, I realized that an opportunity has presented itself to make real long-term change, not just for future Americans, but in the way that we view our responsibilities to get involved with and stay active in our communities. this weight not drag you down, but help to get your heels stuck in.
I love Scarlett, Charlotte Johansson, but she is so winded. She is totally winded. I like what she's saying. Planned Parenthood is still alive, but I don't know for how long, because it's still, this issue is still in the hands of the Republicans and Donald Trump. It's still a part of Obamacare that they are definitely going to try and to repeal. It's going to happen. I mean, it's in their hands. I mean, a lot of people say, well, they failed. The Republicans failed to come up with a viable choice for the American care, the American Healthcare Act, if I can say it. Yeah, they failed. They didn't get it through. Paul Ryan and his crazy ass, they didn't get this through. But it's still with them. It's still theirs to repeal. And if they're going to try and repeal it, they're also going to latch Planned Parenthood onto that bill also. If they kill the Affordable Care Act, they kill Planned Parenthood. Somebody said Donald Trump doesn't get it, or he just doesn't care. I'm going to tell you something. Donald Trump just doesn't care. It's not that he doesn't get it. He gets it. He just don't give a damn. He doesn't give a damn what you think. I think the only thing Donald Trump knows is what he wants. Donald Trump is so used to having people around him that are going to kiss his ass. He's so used to having people around him who's going to tell him what he wants to hear. They're not going to tell this man what he needs to hear. They will tell him what he wants to hear. And I think that's bad. In Donald Trump's situation, you need people around him to tell him what he needs to do, not what he wants to do. But you got so many people around him kissing his ass, licking his boots, you know, yes, man. That's all over the place. You know, that's all over the place in the White House. That's all they're doing. Kissing his butt, and they don't mind doing it. And if you jump in one of them's ass because they're lapdogging Donald Trump, they will get pissed off at you. They'll get upset at you because you upset at them for letting Donald Trump get away with so much that he shouldn't be getting away with. Okay, he's under several investigations for Russia colluding with the 2016 election. Now, Donald Trump should not be able to get anything through Congress or seat any Supreme Court nominee until these investigations are over. If this had been a Democrat, this wouldn't even gotten this far. He'd have been out, or she would have been out. But the Republicans, like I've said many times, are aiding and abetting Donald Trump. You know what I think, folks? I think the Republicans are planning secretly to get rid of Donald Trump. I really do. I think they're planning secretly to get rid of Donald Trump. What they want from Donald Trump, the reason why they haven't gotten rid of Donald Trump, I believe they haven't gotten rid of Donald Trump right now because they want him to make sure that his Supreme Court nominee is seated on the Supreme Court. After Neil Gorsuch, whatever his name is seated on the Supreme Court, I believe they are going to invoke impeachment papers against Trump. That's the only rationale I can think of right now, is that they are waiting for Donald Trump to seat his Neil Gorsuch, this his nominee for the Supreme Court. So there'll be a 5-4 on the Supreme Court. I mean, when you're nominated to the Supreme Court and you seated on the Supreme Court, you've got that job for life. And once he gets nominated on the Supreme Court, the Democrats, you know, they're going to be losing for years if he is hard to the right. if he's hard to the right, Democrats can forget it. He is going to get in there, you know, because the Republicans are just, you know, they're bullies. They're going to get this guy seated, regardless whether the Democrats give him one vote or no votes. The Republicans are going to find a way to sit this guy with a straight party vote. And I think after he's seated into the Supreme Court, I think they're going to drop impeachment papers on Donald Trump. I believe they're using Donald Trump so they can have the majority on the Supreme Court. And after that, I think they're going to get rid of Donald Trump because they know themselves that Trump is an embarrassment. He's an embarrassment to the United States. He's about to start a war with Korea. Instead of diplomacy, he's ratcheting up threats and all this kind of thing against Kim Jong-un and whatever his name is, Korea. And we're going to be in a lot of trouble. And it's awful. It is awful. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Excuse me, folks. I have to stop to cough. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, and I thank my guest, Marty Angelo. I hope you enjoyed the story, because that's what it's all about making the world a better place. And I'm proud that he's out there, and I'm proud that you're out there, and that you're listening to the show. All right, we have tomorrow on the show, we're going to have, let's see. You got a list there? Let me see what we got. Okay, Danielle Linder. I think we booked her, okay? All right, so that's what it's all about. We've got the whole slate of guests for the month, and that should be interesting. So always tune in to the George Wilder Jr. Show and sit back and just take a listen. 347-857-1762. Just take a listen. All right, we're gonna do this, folks, and we're going to be right back. Can we do Seth Meyers?
The Trump administration and the GOP are already pursuing a slash and burn strategy to push their agenda.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio out of the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. Folks, we are in some trying times. We are in some dark times. We must fight for an America without hate. We must fight for an America without bigotry. We must fight for an America without racism. We must fight for our rights. We must fight to continue to be Americans. Some of those rights are being threatened, taken away. But we have to get out here and fight the good fight. You know, and it has to be done, folks. It has to be in a non-violent way. We know how to do things non-violently. So let's go out and make our voices heard, fighting non-violently.
Donald Trump is a con man. That is basically the easiest way to describe Donald Trump, the human being. And a lot of people knew this. We knew as soon as he announced his run for president, every horrible con he'd pulled off on the American public in the past. Trump University, Trump Stakes, how he screwed over all his workers. The man did everything possible to make a few extra dollars at the expense of everyone else, regardless of the fact that he was delivering shoddy products and lies. So we knew that. A lot of the American public knew it. A lot of Trump supporters understood that fact. But they still voted for him. And the question is, why did so many Americans fall for this Donald Trump con? Think about this. I know we've talked about the racism and the sexism, and yes, that played a huge role. Hillary Clinton's lack of talking about the issues played a role in people going to Trump. But why were they so desperate that they would fall for such obvious lies? We have a real problem in the United States, not as intense as the racism and the sexism, But there is a psychological problem with people in the United States. And that problem is that we're always trying to find the hero. We have a very severe and almost borderline disgusting case of hero worship in the United States. We're desperate to find anyone who says something that could indicate that they might do something that could possibly help our current situation. And Donald Trump understood that. That is one of the first traits of a con man, is psychological manipulation. And that's what he did with a lot of this country. He promised them these great things that they didn't even know that they wanted, like a wall between U.S. and Mexico. Because he found out that people who are unhappy about their situation are desperate for somebody to blame and desperate for somebody to come along and say that they're going to fix it. Hero worship and blame. And that's what we're looking at right now with the American psyche. You know, maybe the Midwesterner whose job got cut because his company moved overseas, maybe Trump convinced him that if we build that wall between us and Mexico, your job's coming back. It's the Mexicans that stole your job. Has nothing to do with the fact that your industry simply went out of business due to a lack of demand, due to basic economics. No. It's somebody else's to blame. Put your faith in me and I'll make it better. And that's what happened. Because Americans wanted that hero, that, you know, unsung outsider establishment, political vigilante to swoop in and save the day. And they were desperate for it. That's why a lot of Republicans go back and look at Ronald Reagan and say, what a great man. He was amazing. He was awesome. It's false hero worship. Reagan was terrible. There is no way to say that Reagan was a good president. He killed unions, Iran-Contra. I mean, good God, the economy went into recessions constantly during his tenure. But Republicans don't see that. They see him as just this average guy who came in and golly gee, he did a great job. He's a hero. No, he's not. He is not. Just like Donald Trump is not. And we've seen it. Because once a con man gets what they want, the con is over and they can do whatever they want. And that's what happened with Donald Trump. The second the election was over, all those promises to drain the swamp, well, it turns out he's picking the worst people from that swamp to run his administration. And suddenly the public, Trump voters, not the whole public, only the people dumb enough to vote for Donald Trump, are like, oh my God, I've made a huge mistake. And you did. You were conned because you were desperate. And that's not necessarily your fault. And this is where the Democrats need to come in and explain what that party stands for. If they were to actually go out there and talk to these people who were desperate for a hero, these people would understand that the Democratic Party does represent them. They are fighting for them, or at least they used to. Today, it's almost hard to distinguish between a Democrat and Republican. But 4 years ago, 8 years ago, if we would have done that, we would have beat Donald Trump before he even entered the race. He probably wouldn't have entered the race. People are desperate for somebody to come along and make their lives a little better. They want that hero. The Democratic Party could have been that hero. But instead, they let con man Trump come in and fool millions of voters whose lives are going to be much, much worse in the next 4 years because the Democratic Party didn't do anything to prevent it.
All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. It is 7:20 7:21, depends on which clock you look at around here. And we are broadcasting live out of the city of Chicago. It is around, let me see, I think I have the weather controls in front of me, about 50 degrees in the city of Chicago, 7:20, dark, raining, gray, dull, overcast skies. I mean, it's a mess, but it feels good, and it's great to be alive. It's great to be doing the show. It's great to be from Chicago. It is expensive in the city of Chicago, like I was saying earlier. It's very expensive. There's a lot of taxes. People are leaving the city for good reason, I think. I would never stop anybody who wants to go. If you want to go, you don't go. You want to get rid of it. And one of the things about the high crime, I want to say something else about the high crime areas in the city of Chicago. And I just may be repeating myself, but a lot of people are leaving those high crime areas. They're moving. They're taking their children with them because they're afraid. Anytime you can't walk down the street in your own neighborhood with fear of being shot or robbed or raped, which is a real, real, real possibility, you got to pack up and move, especially if you can afford to do it. You're going to move. And a lot of these communities, these high crime communities, are going to be left looking like ghost towns, or they will left to be ran strictly by the gangbangers, the thugs, because they would have ran families up out of those communities. And this is what I believe is happening. And I don't know why the police or the mayor would let these thugs control these communities without ridding these communities of these thugs. I mean, as I've said earlier, I mean, one of their job criteria is to protect the people of the city and the state, and they're not doing it. They're making excuses. Well, we need resources. We need jobs. We need better stores. We need to give these people better education. So I can understand where you're coming from when you say those things, but the bad guys, they don't give a damn about an education. The bad guys, the thugs, they don't give a damn about a job. They don't want a job. They want to go out here and shoot, kill, and rob. And for the people who do want jobs and the people who do want to better themselves, the bad guys are going to try and stop them from doing that. You have to protect your people or you will not be in office. Rahm Emanuel should not try to run again for mayor. He is not going to get it. I mean, because his opponents are going to be lining up and they're going to have one thing on their mind. Not how many libraries are being built on the west sides and the south sides of the city. Not about Barack Obama's library over there in Jackson Park. They're going to be talking about the crime epidemic that he can't seem to solve, or maybe he doesn't want to try and solve. Maybe he's getting tired of hearing reporters ask him questions about solving crime in the city. Well, he's just going to have to give up that mayor's seat on the fifth floor of City Hall if he can't seem to do his job. Because one of his job is to keep the citizens of this city safe, and that is not happening. The bad guys are going to continue to be bad guys. Bad guys are going to continue to go to jail. Bad guys are going to continue to shoot and kill until they are taken off the streets. And that is something he isn't doing. He's not taking these guys off the street. It's one thing for a bad guy to shoot up a family. It's another thing for a bad guy not to be caught, not to be apprehended. That bad guy is thinking that he's gotten away with that. So if that bad guy feels that he's gotten away with killing that entire family, he's going to go and look for another entire family to kill until he is apprehended by the police, if he ever is apprehended by the police. And that's a bad thing. That's not good. So we have to get a handle on what's going on in the city of Chicago. We can't think about about anything else. The number one priority in this city, the number one priority, it should be on everybody's mind, getting the crime statistics down or trying to eliminate what's going on in the city of Chicago. This is a beautiful city, a great city, being tarnished by a few thugs. And that's not right.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a crawl.
Radio straight out of the city of Chicago. I hope you enjoyed the show, and I hope you join me tomorrow. Bye-bye, everybody. Take care.